Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan, and you can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Hi, I'm Steve McGookin. I'm the former chairman of New York Spurs, nyspurs.com, and you can also reach me at Steve McGookin on Twitter or at Northern Slant.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jake. I'm Newcastle representative for the podcast. You can get me on Twitter at Jake Japan with two N's.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, we're just going to talk a little bit about the big football news of the day, which was Arsenal winning, was it the 14th, I think I saw? Community Shield? It was some absurd number.
It was a lot.
They've won it many, many times.
Yes, we have. And three in the last 4 years.
That'll do. And I'm really curious to hear how you guys view this as an event. Because for me, when I first really started getting into the sport, Steve, you'll know this because you were in the States at the time as well, it was the first match Fox would cover for the upcoming season. And so I always viewed it more as the beginning of the new season rather than the tail end of the old. But, you know, we talked about friendlies a couple weeks back and whether or not they matter. So instead of just asking you if the Community Shield matters, do you view the event and the pageantry of it being at Wembley and everything as kind of the end of the preseason or more as the beginning of the new upcoming season?
Well, we won it, so it counts this year. United won it last year. Mm-hmm. It didn't count, but we won it this year, so it does count. And if you think that's ridiculous, I don't care. Realistically, probably not, but Iwo Courtois took a penalty. Come on. It's a friendly.
Yeah, I always regarded it as a competitive friendly, to be honest with you, and I always thought it was kind of the last match of the preseason build-up. But as Dan says, there's a trophy on offer, and at the end of the season, when you're posing with whatever you won, you know, the shield was always there. So it's a good way to kick off the season. It gets people interested in the game again. But I always thought of it as a competitive friendly.
Yeah, I think a good description of it. It's sort of, it's not quite what a friendly is. It's not sort of a competitive game either. It's somewhere in the middle. And when you talk about sort of the first game of the new season, or sort of the last game of the preseason, it's sort of like somewhere in the middle of that as well. Like, it's kind
like
of matters.
Weird,
like
a weird event purgatory.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's sort of like, I guess what it would be sort of like a coronation of a queen. I don't know where I'm going with this, but something like that. You know, it's like something completely pointless.
It's like if you rank a preseason game as a 1 and a regular season game as a 2, it's a 1.5.
That's exactly what I'm trying to get at. Yeah. But yeah, it's somewhere in between that, and you see like all the coverage on social media and such. Like, you don't get that for a friendly, so it has to matter somewhat more. And the fact it was at Wembley, so yeah, I'd say it's sort of like a glorified friendly, a competitive friendly is a better way of putting it.
Always a worrying thing as well, because you don't want any of your players to get injured. And it's sort of one of those games where at the end of the day, you would rather keep your squad completely intact. You know, and that's the outcome that you want at the end of it. And obviously we had a bit of an issue with Trippier in our final friendly yesterday. So I think if you think of it in terms of like the final piece of preparation for teams to start the season next week, then that's obviously, you know, front and center.
Yeah. Obviously, the two teams today, Arsenal and Chelsea, are both thought very highly of heading into the new season. Do you think either of them will be title favorites this year? Currently, it seems like City and Chelsea, just depending on what site you look at, are the betting favorites. But who do you guys think will... Or at least are expected to win the title this season?
City. I'm surprised Chelsea are that high, actually. I'm I don't think they've had a great summer, and now they have European football, which is going to be extra games, and they were short on depth last year, and they haven't really added any, except for getting their loan army back. But even then, they sold Traore, they sold Ake, they sold Loftus. Did they sell or they either sold or loaned Loftus-Cheek?
They loaned Zuma out.
Did they sell Chalobah?
Yes, they did sell Chalobah. That's what they sold.
Yeah, it's Chelsea have like 50 loan players. I'm okay, getting it confused, but I don't think they've had a great summer. I don't really regard. I think they're third favorite at best. I have City as one, and United as a relatively distant second.
I would be, Kev, I'd be hugely controversial and say that, I think the same seven teams are going to occupy the top seven places as last season, but obviously in a different order. I think United, for me, probably have the potential to rise the furthest from last year. But I think, as Dan mentioned, the crux is going to be how the teams who are playing in the Champions League adapt to that and deal with that in the course of their season. I think for Liverpool, obviously as of today, nothing's announced, but a lot's going to depend on whether they keep Coutinho and if he goes, who they replace him with. So, it's hard to say right now. It's really City, Chelsea, United, I think, and then us, Arsenal and Liverpool, with Everton in the mix. I think Everton have had a pretty good off season. So it's hard to see. I was surprised City sold Iheanacho, to be honest, but I suppose given who else they have,
that doesn't seem to rate him particularly highly either.
And their ability to go out and get whoever they want, it makes perfect sense. So
and there is a buyback in there.
Yeah,
right. And I think Lacazette will turn out to be a good signing for Arsenal. And the other one, I suppose, that's still unresolved is Van Dijk. It depends really where he ends up as well. So,
If Liverpool get Van Dijk and Keita, they're title contenders, but
it currently looks like they're doing neither after both looking super close at times.
Yeah, I was concerned for a point, but it knock on all the wood, but I don't think they're going to happen at this point.
Yeah.
I think Van Dijk could happen. I think that's one that definitely could happen. I think he's gonna have to leave. And I'm not completely buying the Chelsea rumors. I don't know why they'd want another centre back.
Mm-hmm. Having it doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah.
And
having Antonio Rudiger as well, it doesn't really make much sense for them to get him. So I think he'd probably end up at Liverpool if I had to guess. But I think Liverpool are definitely an outside bet if they don't go into the Champions League. I think if they lose to Hoffenheim and maybe play and just squander the Europa League, if they get into it, they've definitely got a chance. They've got, they've got a lot of goals in that attack. I think they're going to lead the goals in lead the league in attack and goals this year. I think definitely Salah. Yeah, the way they played against Bayern Munich was just incredible.
Terrifying.
They're going to be so fluid, the fluidity for a lot of the lesser teams as well is going to be so difficult to defend against. One that could potentially, if they bring in a couple of players of the
they
level,
they probably
of
have
Van
most variance in where they'll finish. Like I can see them finishing anywhere between fifth and first.
Whereas
everyone else is more of a two or three.
And we're
spot.
Just basing that on whether or not the defense exists this year, correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because nobody has doubts about
that. Well, and injuries.
Right, that's fair. And as Steve mentioned, I don't think the Coutinho thing will happen. But I've also very publicly said I didn't think the Neymar thing would happen. So. Interesting.
In fairness, I didn't think that. I thought that was just bull as well, but then it wasn't.
Yeah, it's incredible. And also, shout out to my employer, Goal, for being the source of the article from last year, the week before he signed his contract extension, which added the 222 million euro release clause, saying that it was part of a ploy to get him to Paris. And that also got mocked a lot at the time, and here we are. So,
in a very weird world.
Yep.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, Kevin, you and I have spoken about this before. I mean, the release clause is really, in a world where you have a very small universe of clubs to whom money is no object, basically, release clauses are, you just pick a number. I think where the damage to football's economics going forward will be is in Neymar's wage structure and how that knocks on to other players. So I think... in a strange way, like you and I had said previously, I sort of half expected somebody to pay that, and it was only going to be one of, you know, two or three clubs that were actually going to do that. But as you know, I mean, a year ago, I predicted that Messi was going to leave and go to play with Pep. So, you know, just shows you how you can be totally off the ball. But yeah, we'll see how that, what the knock on effect of the Neymar transfer is for the other elite clubs across Europe.
Yeah, I had Jake and I were talking about it the day that all looked like it had been finalized, and my final thought on it was, there is a bit of catharsis seeing a club do this to Barcelona after they've done it to so many other
clubs. So much catharsis, so much.
But there's an equal amount of concern, as Steve was saying, about the direction the sport could go if this starts to become a more consistent occurrence in the sport. But
they took Fabregas and Henry from us. I don't care. Screw Barca.
That is fair. I mean, they gave us Gio Dos Santos, and now they might get Paulinho, so...
In fairness, they did also take Thomas Vermaelen for actual real human money. So
for real bucks.
Like not Monopoly money.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with questions for each of these guests regarding their clubs.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Dan, we'll continue to lead in with you and your hype about your quote-unquote trophy slash shield today. It's definitely a shield. It is a quote-unquote trophy. My question for you is going to be about Alexis, because Wenger came out this week and basically just kiboshed any potential news that he may be leaving, said he's staying here this year. The only issue with that is he has said that about players a lot of times and been wrong frequently with Van Persie, with Nasri, with Clichy. So how confident are you, even with him saying that he's staying, that he is staying? And if you do think he's staying this season, do you think he'll stay beyond it?
I'm quite confident in him staying this season, though I don't think that's the right decision, and I don't think he'll stay after this season. Like, I think the only way it's worth it to keep Alexis and not and throw away the, let's say, 50, 60 million pounds we would get for him is if we win the title, and I don't think we're winning the title or coming particularly close to it, so yeah.
So, yes, this year, going to walk.
Yes, this year. Next year. And then he's going to be the best Bosman in, I mean, Lewandowski, but one of the best Bosmans in recent history.
Yeah, any thoughts on where he might end up?
City.
Yeah?
Yeah. It just, maybe Chelsea. I don't know. City seemed to be the obvious one. Everyone who are linked.
And the connection to Barca back then.
Yeah. I still don't know if, I don't know why he would want to play in a Pep system, if I'm being honest, but.
Considering he was like stuck down the pecking order and didn't really get the ball.
He's an individualistic player and Pep wants a system.
Yeah, it will definitely be interesting to see where that falls.
Especially for his wide men. I remember, well, was it? There's that Henry Sky Sports thing where he analyzes Pep and like how he tried to move around in his wide position and then got subbed off for it. Yeah. And that's Alexis' kind of his thing. He's not a winger. He's just going to stay wide, provide width.
Right.
But I don't know. Lots of money. Great cash, homie.
You mentioned there that you don't think you're going to be winning the title this season. I think the main concern, maybe not a concern for neutrals, I don't think they're particularly concerned at all, but the clear shortcoming last season was the regression of the defense. Do you think that will improve this season, and what do you think led to that last year?
I thought the midfield was terrible. It left defense exposed often. We were bad in transition because I'm going to blame this on the role Coughlin was asked to play more than Coughlin himself, because Wenger, for some reason, wanted him to... Like, he had the same setup as in players, but instead of having Coughlin as a sweeper behind, he wanted him to go win the ball high up a pitch, which when it works is great, but it doesn't work anywhere near often enough to make up for the fact that if it doesn't work and he gets bypassed, teams can go in straight at our defense, and I don't care who your defenders are. If you're getting attacked with no cover at all repeatedly, you're going to concede goals and you're going to concede chances. And Mustafi had a fine, not great season, and he's a fine, not great defender. But and then we had, Koscielny sometime. Bellerin was hurt the entire second half of the season. It was a mess, but I think the mess started from midfield more than the individual defenders. The three at the back helped a lot. It helped a lot in the games we played, but you can only take so much from the games we played, because we played against bad teams and teams that didn't care. So, you know, we'll see how it goes up against teams that are not bad and do care.
Yeah. How much impact do you think Kolasinac will have? Aside from winning you the Community Shield.
Aside from that. And aside from being just a massive human being. Like, huge. I think he's a lot of it. I'm not sure he'll help specifically, but if we're going three at the back, he has the legs to play wing back, and has a foot that can do things with a soccer ball, unlike Kieran Gibbs, because he has a foot that can't do anything with anything. I'm not really sure they actually exist, but Nacho Monreal, as great as he is, he doesn't have the legs to play wing back. Like, it was very, very apparent when he tried to play there. He fills a need, a very desperate need, especially if we're playing three at the back. If we're playing four, it's a less desperate need, but even then, Gibbs is bad and Nacho's getting up there. So it was a need regardless. And he looks very good, especially for a free.
Yeah. Maybe not better than Alexis will be next year, but pretty good.
I'm just going to go cry.
coming to you now, Steve. Last week we were going to touch on the Wembley factor, didn't have time, but we'd be very interested to get your take on it, because there was so much doom and gloom, and then even though it was a friendly, both Tottenham and Juventus played pretty much their first 11s on Saturday, and Tottenham played very well, end up getting a 2-0 result. You don't want to put too much weight in it, but again, you know, they were pretty full 11s. How are you feeling about the move into Wembley, and what do you think the effects will be either on and off the pitch?
Psychologically, it's huge, Kevin. And going to Wembley, as we know, leaving behind the fortress that was White Hart Lane, you know, that is psychologically is going to be a huge hurdle for us for this season. You're right about the Juve match. I mean, I watched most of the first half and most of the second half, and I thought our two goals against Juve were an example of how well we can actually do when we're playing that free-flowing type of football against a team that doesn't play a high press against us. I mean, we saw in that pretty disastrous game in Nashville, as you know, that we were pressed out of that, basically. So I hope, you know, Poch is able to adjust to that. But yeah, psychologically, I think the Wembley factor is going to be huge, particularly in the Champions League, and particularly how we get off to a good start. If we can get a good couple of solid home results early in the season, then I think we're going to be fine. But it's going to be tough to not have the atmosphere that we had at White Hart Lane, or even just the sense of knowing that we rarely concede or rarely lose at White Hart Lane anymore. So we'll see. I mean, in terms of, you know, broader issues around how the mentality of the fans thinking about the team going forward, I'm actually not that worried about our inactivity in the transfer market. I mean, I don't know about you, to be honest with you. I mean, other teams around us obviously have strengths, and so that's a consideration. But I know it sounds like a cop-out and a cliche, but I'm actually excited about the idea of having a healthy Harry Winks back, for example, because he's one of those players who's having him available is as good as a new signing. I hate to say that. I mean, Danny Rose as well, but, you know, we know what he can do already. I mean, Winks has the biggest upside of anyone in our squad, I think, and I'm enthusiastic to see how he can develop for a full healthy season. So, yeah, I mean, balancing the two things off, I think that the squad that we left White Hart Lane with was a very strong squad. Whether we can replicate second place this year is a huge challenge given the hurdle of playing each week at Wembley or every other week at Wembley. So it's the elephant in the room, Kevin.
Yeah, I really like your Winks point, and actually I'd already written a note to talk to you about where you think Spurs would finish if there were no more signings. As you mentioned, a lot of other teams are strengthening, but a lot of the people we're competing with are strengthening by adding a striker, which, mm-hmm. you know, bringing in Lacazette for Arsenal to play up front, Lukaku to United. We do not need to do that because Harry Kane is up front and with his two golden boots. So if we just stood pat, even with the Trippier injury and not knowing how bad that is a week before the season starts, how high do you think Tottenham could finish just with the squad as is?
This is heresy, Kevin. I don't think we can finish second again. I don't think we have the strength and depth to be able to do it. And obviously the Wembley situation is going to be tough. So we've had this conversation several times about Vincent Janssen. We're still waiting for him to prove himself, really. I mean, we all love his enthusiasm and the fact that he contributes a lot off the ball and you know, even when he comes on late. But our problem again is if Harry goes down with another long-term injury, then we have to adjust to that. And last year we were able to, you know, use Son and Eriksen stepped up. Dele Alli scored a significant number of goals from midfield. But the problem remains that we don't have a recognized backup striker who's consistent that we can actually rely on to step in that to fill that role if we play that formation.
So basically, if Kane gets hurt, then that's when the trouble could start.
But it was last year, and it worked out okay. I mean, you know, Harry missed nearly, you know, how many games did he miss at the start of the season last year?
Yeah, that like October, November period with the first knee injury.
Still won the Golden Boot, you know. So, but that's a lot to put on the kid's shoulders, especially at Wembley. As I say, the psychological effect of moving from the lane is going to be huge, and we're going to need to hit the ground running with wins in the first couple of home games, I think. So, but yeah, I would hope that we could make top four this year, but I would hope for a solid run in one of the cups because I think the structure of the team as it is at the moment is if we don't win anything this coming season or if we don't show well in the Champions League, then we're going to have the conversation at the end of the season with us about to move into the new stadium about which of our young players we can hold on to.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see who is willing to commit to this long term if there is a slip up or if we happen to miss top four, who would be willing mm-hmm. to stay around to try to get back in there the following year. Kind of on a similar note, Jake, about if teams don't make signings, it's basically been your mantra this whole offseason is that you need to add, especially up front. There is rumors between Dan and Jake here of potential Lucas Perez, either loan or signing. If that doesn't happen, if you don't make a signing up front, how do you think the whole Gale, Mitrovic, Ayoze, Perez situation will work itself out?
We would definitely sign a player up front. Whether they're going to be a good player or not, I'm not so sure. At the start of the summer, I had some sort of pipe dream that we might get Michy Batshuayi, and it was possible at one point. But Chelsea need to sign another striker. Chelsea need to sign another striker, and at the moment, it doesn't look like that's happened. So we've moved on. Rafa's been very clear in his quotes about signings. He said he hasn't been able to get the players that he wanted to sign. And I think that's mainly because of the budget, and we are in a very unique situation. We never got parachute payments because we came straight back up. So sort of the hit of relegation is coming more this summer, which makes it quite difficult for us to put fees out there. And with the Mikel Merino deal from Borussia Dortmund, it's been a loan with an obligation to buy, which is very much a point of pushing the spending to next summer rather than spending now because we just don't have the budget. This week, yeah, the Lucas Perez stuff has been going on. I'm not totally convinced we're his first choice or that we're going to offer
Arsenal. Defoe is probably his first choice. Yeah. But if you can get him, get him. He's good.
Yeah, I think he's
terrible.
Outside
the terrace, he's terrible, but that's fine. It doesn't matter.
But yeah, Benitez was asked about him today and he said that he's a player that he knows. And so he wouldn't even come out with a quote of anything if it wasn't possible. I think there's a chance, but I don't think we're going to give Arsenal the money they probably want. I think if we did get a deal, it might be a similar one to the Mourinho one, where it's an obligation to buy and it's sort of pushing the money to next summer, which all it does is put the same problems next summer as well. But we'll see how it plays out. Another one was, is it Hossaloo from Stoke City? I know we've been pretty heavily linked with him. There was a bid turned down. I saw the Mirror reported it to be 12 million, but I can't imagine it was that. Considering we're not willing to pay that for Perez, I don't think we'll pay it for Hossaloo. I think it was probably a lot lower than that. But yeah, that's another player. And it's very similar to all our signings. It's been players that Rafa knows or he can check up on, you know, or ask about, get background checks. He played for Real Madrid, I think, one time. So that's a pedigree to sign a player on. He did. I think he's even scored in that game. He played one game, one goal. So, if you know, better strike rate than Benzema. So get him in. But no, I think we'll sign someone, probably Spanish. And I think we might even sign another goalkeeper. And maybe another winger as well. I think Rafa would ideally want three or four players, but to get those, we need to move players on, and we've got a massive wage bill. Masadio Haidara, we agreed a deal to let him go to St. Etienne for free, but he turned it down. Emmanuel Riviera's turned deals down. They're just all turning deals down because they're on such big wages. There's just no pressure for them to move on, and we can't really bring players in. We've got, I think, like 30 first-team players. We need to move some of them on before we can bring players in. And all the reports about Rafa being unhappy, I think it's probably true to an extent, but I don't think it's at the club. I think it's more because of the situation he's found himself in. A lot of it isn't his doing. Well, most of it, all of it isn't his doing. Since he's arrived, he's done well in recruitment. Players are probably on more reasonable wages. We're not signing as many sort of duds. So I think it's going to be a slow build. Rafa knows that this season is just going to be about staying up and consolidating. And it's a long-term project. I think 4 or 5 years down the line, I think Rafa looks that far ahead as well. The way he talks about Newcastle, he definitely sees it as a long-term project. I think we just need to get the players we need, like Rafa says, not the players we want, the players we need to get us to the next stage of that development, which would be, I don't know, a mid-table finish. And I think it's well within our capabilities, even if we didn't sign any more players.
I think the wing comment is really interesting because I have been very impressed with Christian Atsu this preseason. Do you think that he is finally becoming the player that the talent always implied he could be?
Yeah, he's been very good. Against Wolfsburg, he was one of our best players. And I think today against Hellas Verona, he played very well again. So yeah, he's been an interesting one because when we signed him, we thought he was going to absolutely be excellent in the Championship, but he wasn't. And we didn't think we were going to sign him on a permanent. And it wasn't until sort of April or May that he was starting to, you know, really thrive. He got a couple of good goals. He was starting to look like one of our best players. And it was at that point, I think it was literally his last three or four matches that convinced Rafa to make the deal permanent. And he's carried that on through the preseason. I think he'll probably start next week. He probably starts the season as our first choice left winger. So it's up to him, really. I think he definitely has the talent, and he knows Rafa's systems well. He seems to be a good character as well. He's not one of the sulkers that we've had before. He seems to apply himself well. I think he's definitely one that could be very good, but also he's done nothing to really suggest he can do it at Premier League level yet. There's still a lot of question marks about him. Like, it's the same with most of our squad. We don't have many sort of proven, I hate the word proven Premier League, but you know, they've never really done it at the top levels, and there's lots of doubts about whether they can do that. I'm sure they can. I mean, he's one of the best coaches in the league, even if he is managing a newly promoted team. So the Rafa factor alone is worth five to 10 points, and that's probably why we'll be okay. So yeah, back to Atsu. Yeah, good player. I think he could be good. He's just got the look of someone who will be really frustrating, sort of like a Wilfried Zaha in the very early stages of his development. Just like, he can be very exciting to watch, but also when he gets to the final third, the final product isn't always there. But no, he's going to start the season as probably as one of our best players. So yeah, it's just difficult to get that enthused by many of our players. Like, we had our kit launch, which is pretty irrelevant, but like, the three players used were Dwight Gayle, Matt Ritchie and Isaac Hayden. Like, if they're your best three players or like your most marketable players, then yeah, you're one of the worst teams, one of the bottom 10 teams rather than the top 10 teams.
Sounds like you could use Sissoko back. He looked good.
I heard, and if anything, that's just getting him in the team for his homecoming next week. Which, if he starts at Sidges Park next week, he is going to have an awful game because he's going to get so much stick.
And if Lucius he does, it might be at right back.
Yeah,
I was going to say he might play right wing back.
Yeah,
if he plays right wing back, then Christian Atsu could get a hat trick.
Everybody,
he gets three good shots on goal. Whether they go in,
he will get shots.
Describing him.
Yeah, he's going to get jobs if he's against Moussa Sissoko. Yeah, if he plays next week, I will be very confident we'll get a result because he is not only an awful player, he is has the worst mentality of a football player I've ever seen at Newcastle, and he is not going to be the type of player that reacts well to getting booed and absolutely getting pelters from the stands. He's not that type of player. I really hope he starts.
Well, we will see. And looks like we'll also have time to do a couple match previews at the end, and obviously Newcastle will be playing Tottenham then. But now, kind of in the vein of Inatsu, who could very much develop this year, I want to talk to each of you about a player at your club that you think could take the biggest step forward this season. We'll start with you, Dan.
Biggest step forward could be Iwobi. I mean, if he plays the way he did today, probably Iwobi. Him and Bellerin could both take steps because, you know, young players' potential. Obviously, they could. But I think Bellerin's had he's got to a higher point than Iwobi has, so he obviously has more room for growth. But yeah, Iwobi's got to a higher point than Bellerin. So if he gets enough minutes, I think he could take a big step. That's an if, considering the two players in front of him are likely going to be Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. But, you know, we're Arsenal. We get injuries. And Alexis could find himself playing at striker with injuries. So who knows? If he gets the minutes, he looked very good today. He often looks good, even if he does have a bit of a problem with floating in and out of games. But yeah, he could take a big step. Although if we're going purely off perception, probably Granit Xhaka, because his perception was so much worse than his reality, and I think people are finally starting to figure that out. But if we're going on actual ability, probably Alex Iwobi.
Fair enough, Steve. I know you were very complimentary of Winks there. Is that who you're going to stick with here? Or maybe somebody crazy like Nkudu, who at times looks like he could really be a player and at other times makes it look very confusing as to how he's on the wages he's on.
This is true. I was going to say, though, in terms of the biggest step forward from performance last season, I mean, Sissoko has to be your man, really, doesn't he? I mean, if he plays remotely well in any... You know, that's...
He didn't kick the ball at his own net.
I mean, I totally agree, though, with Jake. I think... I think he it'll be a challenge for him to raise his game for next week if he plays in that opener. So let's just see how it goes. It'd be interesting to see how Poch uses him through the season anyway. But yeah, I mean, Winks is one of those players where you know there's so much more to come, and really what you want is to have him bedded in and play some a run of games, a run of regular games. But of course, I suppose the big one is it's a make or break year for Kieran Trippier, and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed he's not hurt too badly after Saturday. But if you've ambition at all as a player and confident in your own abilities, which he seems to be, then you'll welcome a challenge like this, and I think he'll definitely step up. I mean, that doesn't mean, let's be honest, that doesn't mean that we don't have an adjustment to make in the back four. And I think that's going to take time, and it'll depend how Poch uses Eric Dier. But I think Trippier has the potential to really come into his own this season. Although, you know, it's obviously been the chalice has been passed to him, whether he likes it or not. But it's up to him to prove that he can step up to it. In terms of the youngsters, interesting. Josh Onuma went out on loan to Villa, which I think is a good loan. Because I think Villa will do pretty well this season, and he'll get some time. Always high hopes for Marcus Edwards, who apparently just signed a new contract for us, and the Hyphen Twins, you know, Carter Vickers and Walker Peters. Also, you saw him up close. This Giorgio kid who played on the U.S. I was very impressed with him actually in the clips that I saw, and it'd be interesting to hear your take on. You know, if you watched him for longer than just the sort of 15 minutes or so, but But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I think it's a challenging year for Trippier. We'll get Winks back, and I think, as I say, there's a high upside with Winks, and we'll see that development this year.
Yeah, Georgiou did look really good in person. Just one of those players that just kind of gets you to that edge of your seat kind of moment. Mm-hmm. Had a shot that could have gone in. And in Tottenham tradition, it tends to not be the hyped ones that come good for us.
Yeah.
It tends to be randomly this person out of nowhere. It's like, oh, well, now he's going to be one of our starters. And you're like, oh, okay. Wasn't it supposed to be Tom Carroll for like 8 years? No? Okay. It'll be Mason, then Bentaleb, then Winks, obviously. So in that mold, it could be Georgiou that all of a sudden comes out of nowhere. We do need help on the wings, especially if Kane would get injured, because then it puts Son up front, leaves kind of a gap there out on the left. I was very impressed with him. I was also very impressed by Kyle Walker-Peters on the left, which is not where we need him. But he did it for the England U-20s, and then in, I think it was the second match against Roma, he was playing on the left, and he looked very assured over there. So interesting to see how he works out. But yeah, obviously, in modern times, just loads of young talent at Tottenham, and with a manager like Pochettino, always a chance that one of them breaks through. All right, and Jake, is there anybody at Newcastle that we should be keeping an eye on there?
Yeah, I've actually got a few for this question. As much as I was bemoaning our lack of quality, that means that there's chances for those on the fringes to come in and sort of grab their opportunity and prove what we've always thought about them. I'll start with one that I always start with every year. I say it could be his year, and then he gets injured and misses the whole season, and that's Rolando Arons. He's such a talent. He's like, he's so quick, dynamic, can beat a player, got a good shot, good cross. He's got everything to be a good Premier League player. And every preseason I get convinced by him, and then he goes down injured and misses the rest of the year. And then the next season, it's like he's never been injured. He's exactly the same player. And he gets better as well, which is weird considering he's injured for such a large period of time. So hopefully he stays fit. Because if Atsu doesn't work out, I think he's definitely one that could come in and have a strong season. There's also a certain Alexander Mitrovic, who is still only 22, if you'd believe it or not. And that's still incredibly young for a striker.
Wow, seriously?
Wow.
He's 22 years old, yeah.
Oh my God, he scored on us when he was like 19.
Yeah, he is a huge talent. Like there's a player in there.
Both meanings of a word.
Exactly. I'm just like loaded up Twitter now, and there's an interview of him, and the headline is, "I used to hurl rocks at trains, but football saved me and fatherhood made me a man." That if there's not a better description of a man throwing rocks at trains, Alexander Mitrovic. So yeah, 22 years old, and we haven't signed a striker. Dwight Gale's hamstrings are made of ham, so we might need him to play quite a few games. So he's going to get a lot of chances. And the last Premier League season we were in, I think he scored 9 goals, which considering he's playing in an absolute basket case of a team, it's not that bad. In the Championship, he didn't do too well. He was firmly second choice, and when he did play there were sort of questions about his attitude, but over pre-season I think he's got 3 goals in 6 games, which isn't bad considering he's not been playing every minute. He's very much cut out for the Premier League. I think if Rafa can make him a player, I think Rafa would like to sell him if he had the chance and bring in sort of 10 to 15 million and spend that, but we can't do that at the moment if we've only got 2 strikers and he's one of them. So if he does stay, I think he's going to get minutes and he could definitely push on. A couple of others, CM De Jong is back. He used to be good once. Maybe he can do something. He's
that's
also
like beginning of a song.
he is another. His whole body is made of ham, so he's probably going to go down injured at some point. But no, he's looked good in pre-season. And I think last season, number 10 was a problem position for us. Perez never really looked a natural there. Diame has the first touch that is a tackle, which is just not really what you need. And I don't really think Diame is very good. So CM De Jong has looked good. And he's got the sort of the intelligence to sort of make that role his own. The problem with playing him is that with the lack of pace that Richie's got, can we really use him and De Jong in the same sort of attacking lineup? Probably not, but we'll see how that goes. I think he could have a good season, or he could just be absolutely do nothing, but there's a chance. And finally, a younger player to sort of look out for is Freddie Woodman, the goalkeeper. If he wasn't a goalkeeper sort of another position with a similar talent, he would be in our first team already. He is so good. Sort of similar to Jordan Pickford, but he's like 3 years younger. And maybe not as good as Pickford yet, but he's definitely got that sort of potential.
Then you should probably sell him for $50 million, because apparently that can happen.
we need a goalie, though. And we literally don't
you
have...
You can buy 10.
We could do that. Yeah. But yeah, he was England under-20 goalkeeper, and he did really well in that competition. Mm. And it was only a couple of years ago that he was interviewed, and they asked him about what his like short-term goals were, and he said to get in the England World Cup squad for 2018, so he's not short of sort of ambition. I think if Rafa really doesn't rate our current goalkeepers and we can't get another one in, he could get an opportunity at some point down the line in the season. Maybe if an injury to Rob Elliott or Carl Darlow or something happens, he could get a chance. And if he does, I would back him to do exactly what Pickford did at Sunderland. I think he's that good. So, yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Interesting. All right, well, Jake, we'll stick with you and talk about this Newcastle-Tottenham match. Obviously, your first match back up, as we joked about earlier. Your last match at home against us went fairly well. What are you expecting in this one?
Yeah, we sort of have a good record against Tottenham recently. I think we in our relegation season we beat you twice. So like, and in the season before, I think we've won our last four matches at White Hart Lane or something ridiculous like that. I know we won't be playing there this year, but it's a game that we normally do quite well in. And Rafa's record against Tottenham as a manager is very similar. I think he's won all but one. So like, all the statistics make me think we've got a chance. I don't really know what our team's going to be like. Gale didn't play today, but Rafa said he should be fit for the Tottenham game, so he'll probably start, even though he's not had much of a pre-season. DeAndre Yedlin is not going to play. I think he's injured, so that means Javi Manquillo will play. And if we get there, Marseille, Javi Manquillo, he's probably going to be a fine deputy, but if we get the Sunderland one, we could lose very badly. there's two Javi Manquillos, and I hope we get the better one, and I'm sure under Rafa we will. So the sort of injury news is sort of Yedlin's going to miss it, Gale should be fit.
You could get Javi Manquillo, or you could get Javier Manquillo.
The Shelby, I think, is going to be an interesting one this season. He looks as fit as he's ever looked. He's matured a lot during our season in the Championship. And I think he's going to have a really good season. I wouldn't be surprised if he made the England World Cup squad. I think he's that talented on his day. He's definitely one of the most talented players we have in England. He's just like a basket case of an individual. But he's sort of improved under Rafa. He's really matured. And I think he's going to play in the number 10 role, I believe I've been reading. I think we're going to play a double pivot with Marina, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, the guy we got from Dortmund. He's going to partner Isaac Hayden, and then there's going to be Shelby in front. So, yeah, it's the first game of the season. Tottenham, they've got a few injuries, or at least Trippier and Wanyama, which helps us if they are both out. We're at home, the atmosphere should be great. Benitez is a very good sort of game manager. He knows how to make changes to suit a game. Certain teams, he will have done his research, he'll know exactly what to do. We're probably going to play counter-attack. We've got a lot of pace. I think we'll get a draw. I'm pretty confident we'll get a draw. I don't think we'll lose. I think sort of the optimism around the place, St. James's Park full, that we've sold 45,000 season tickets in a 52,000 seat stadium, which is incredible. So it should be an absolutely great atmosphere, and I think we're going to get at least a point, if not more.
Steve, Jake did mention the injury issues, which includes not only a missing Trippier and Wanyama, but also Rose, Son, Lamella. So not exactly the healthiest team heading into week one. How confident are you?
No, not healthy at all. I mean, but our first choice team that we put out against Juve on Saturday, I think, is a pretty strong lineup. And Newcastle have been my personal bogey team. I don't think I've ever seen us beat Newcastle, to be honest with you. And as I was saying earlier, when you look at the fixtures when they come out, you see that your first game of the season, you don't want to play one of the promoted teams. You don't want to play the best of the three promoted teams, and you certainly don't want to play them away at a place called St. James's Park. So it's going to be a challenge for us. However, I think I'm going to take us to turn the bogey around this year and actually come away with the points. But I think an awful lot is going to hinge on the Trippier injury, because then that's going to affect where he plays Dyer. Does he play Dyer as part of the back four, or does he, you know, just go with the three and hope that Jan and Toby can cover the flanks? So yeah, I mean, and we talked earlier about Sissoko, whether Sissoko plays in that position. It was interesting. Jake, you were talking about Pickford. There was a Spurs fan tweeted after the Pickford transfer. He said, you know, 30 million for Pickford's not that bizarre. He said, we paid 30 million for Sissoko and Pickford's a better midfielder. So, but that, maybe that's a little harsh. Maybe that's a little harsh with Sissoko. But you're right. Certainly psychologically, that's going to be tough for him if he's thrown into that, and it'll be a cauldron as you guys always make it the first game of the season, particularly. So, but I think we can nick it, and we need to nick something. We need to take something out of that game because, as I said, yeah, it's going to be really important for us to hit the ground running at Wembley. First game, Chelsea. You know, what better opportunity to step up is there, and to, you know, atone for the FA Cup semi-final, for goodness sake. And then, you know, we got Burnley at home immediately after that, and then we've got to go to Everton, and then we have Swansea at Wembley. So I think, you know, for us to get off to a good start, we need at least a point at Newcastle and at least a point against Chelsea, and then we'll kick into gear, I think.
Quick side question for you. Harry Kane notoriously has never scored in August, but this is the first year he's had an off-season and a preseason. How, just take a guess, what week do you think Harry Kane will score his first goal?
Oh, next week.
Yeah, the first one?
Yeah, absolutely. Scored a lovely goal against Juventus.
He did. That was a great team goal as well. All right, Dan, you aren't playing anybody that's on the show, but how do you think you'll look next weekend?
It'll be interesting to see what the team looks like, because both Aaron Ramsey and Mesut Ozil are questions for that game after picking up Knox in training. Oh, so much shock.
Arsenal players?
I don't know if
Palmeiras...
No. Nah, never. It's totally new. I don't know Meredith Hacker's status after his pretty major gash above his eye. That was a lot of stitches. Coughlin's hurt, and I'm just devastated. Gabrielle's out for a while, still recovering from that knee injury. Jack Wilshere out again, just totally devo. Just really cannot get over that. And Santi Cazorla is dead. That I actually am upset about, but it's expected.
Is he even expected to return this season, though?
Nope, not really. I mean, wow. April.
Whew.
But, like, come on now. Yeah, he's dead. I hope we can beat Leicester. It's a game we should win. If we want to be title contenders, which we apparently do, because that's really the only legitimate explanation for not selling Alexis, then we should be winning this game. And we're a better team even without Ramsey and Ozil. I don't know Alexis' status, actually, but based on the way we've always tended to rush him back, I'm kind of expecting him to play, but there's not been any confirmation or anything. And Wenger was very, well, he didn't really answer whether he or Mustafi would play, but he didn't say that he was going to rush him back, which I think he would have in the past. So I don't know. He might play, he might not, but I just, knowing the way we tend to rush him back, I feel like he will. But yeah, Leicester, we should beat him. Hopefully we do. If not, to be fair, we never win on the opening day. But if not, it's not a great omen for the rest of the season.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. If you have any projects you'd like to tell people about, or if you want to tell people where they could reach you, now would be a good time.
Yeah, I'm Dan. And actually, one thing I forgot to get in. Congrats on the team for winning a penalty shootout with a keeper that has never saved a penalty for us. But with that, you can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits for Arsenal and dogs. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for having me on again, Kevin. I'm Steve McGugan. You can get me on Twitter at Steve McGugan, or you can go to NYSpurs at nyspurs.com. Or if you want to read any of my stuff that's not football related, you can go to at Northern Slant or northernslant.com. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. You can get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with 2Ns. That's where I plug pretty much anything I write. For the main two sites, I guess, the EPL Index and the Boot Room, so check both them out. Also, a quick plug to the Championship show. I might not host it anymore, but if you want to listen to people talk about actual football that happened this weekend, check out this week's show. It's a pretty good one.
no trophies, but was actual competitive matches. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, at Kevroff on Twitter. If you'd like to reach the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.